of the creative process, and how we all have questions about that, no matter what kind of work we do. So poetry and writing is one way, but music and parenting and all those kinds of things are all creative. And so the Tree of Life, which we will talk about, it is like a rabbit hole. We can go down and just fall for miles. But my hope is that you come out of one session or however many sessions you're able to make with an understanding of yourself as a creative being, in whatever way that looks like. So that's kind of like the framing. I will tell you that when I come into this room, I think about my great-grandmother and my great-great-great-great-grandmother, all of whom could not read or write. As we're doing this work, I invite you to also think about just like, who are you bringing into this space, right? Because we're all bringing in our teachers and our ancestors, especially when we do creative work. So I just wanted to speak that into the room as we begin doing this work. So maybe because we're a smaller group, we can go around quickly and maybe say your name and pronouns and then a question you're holding. There can be a question about Kabbalah, it can be about your creative process. There's nothing too big or too small. Okay, so it can be like, what does this corner of the tree do? Or it can be like, I get stuck always when I put my pen to paper. Okay? So, Brenda, do you feel comfortable beginning?
Sure. Awesome. Sure. My name is Brenda Foley, and I, she, her, my pronouns. And, I guess one of my questions is about wisdom. I don't know much about the Tree of Life. I have gained some wisdom in my 61 years, and I just kind of wondered what the source of that is, and how to cultivate more. And I've always been a creative person, in different facets, and I wrote some poetry at a time in my life that was kind of cool. So I want to bring that back.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Forrest Monson, and I use he, him pronouns. And a question I'm holding is the role of fear in creativity and overcoming fear.
Beautiful.
Hi, my name's Ian, and I completely missed what the prompt was.
A question you are holding about Kabbalah, about creative process, about poetry.
Incredible. Also, he or they pronouns. Questions about Kabbalah. But to get put on the spot, good job, me.
Yeah, we can circle back.
At this point, I'm just trying to kind of tap into more creative spaces in my life, just channel that energy more frequently. Anyway, and I've looked at Kabbalah a little bit in like different circles, and I found it interesting, so I was just intrigued to find kind of the intersection between the kind of use the Sephirot as like points of meditation, so using that as a place to sort of channel creative seems interesting.
Awesome, thank you.
Hi, my name is Britta. I use she, her pronouns. And kind of a big question that I feel like I've been having for a little while is, how do I like structure in creativity and time to be creative into my, like, I guess into my free time, like when it's just the onus is only on me, you know? Like,
yeah.
Taking this structure that's like, okay, I come and we live through this, but then how do I take that home kind of and build that in on my own?
Beautiful.
I'm Stacy. I use she, her pronouns. And my question is, how do I access my poet?
My name is Bill. I use he, him, and really, I'm here this week to, as a recently retired person, to see what life means creatively going forward. And I just want to mention that to your grandfather was one of my teachers.
My name is Mark. I use he, him pronouns. I've written several novels, and I'd like to reawaken the muse, I guess, and poetry too.
Yeah. Emily, she, her. And similarly, I feel like creativity has laid dormant this year. And just asking how to reawaken.
I'm Midge, she, her, and is it Bill?
Yes.
I'm recently retired and on a similar journey to rediscover who I am when I'm not just mom and wife.
Yeah.
Find out what is my next step in this new phase of my life.
My name is Wendell. You can call me he and him. And the question I am having right now is how to learn more about sharing and externalizing and connecting through things that I'm already making.
My name is Kathy. You can also call me Katie. I use she, her pronouns. And my question, my perennial question is, how, and I think it's related to fear, how to move away from the product orientation and the productivity orientation, which I feel I'm in so much of the day, and back into process and the permission that, that a process orientation gives me to explore how to do that.
I'm Chris. I use he, him pronouns. And I guess I've written some songs and things over the years that would probably count as poetry. But in the last couple of years, I've been really sort of doing inner work around grief and trauma from a long time ago. And it seems like the poetry sort of dried up as I've been doing this inner work. And I sort of want to refind it again or reconnect with that creative thing, because this work is a healing work, and I feel like I ought to be able to sort of come back to doing creative work through healing. So that's where I'm at.
My name is Judy. I use she, her. I am looking to figure out how to get beyond just. I do a lot of little note-taking and journaling, but I get beyond that into something that's more explicit.
My name is Mina. I go with she, her. And I think I'm really open to outcome and kind of curious and compassionate and just want to see how it unfolds. I didn't come prepared with any particular
I'm Lisa, she, her, and I find that I write when there's angst or journey in life, and I'm at a place of just contentment and more emptiness, so I don't know where to find that source to compel me to write.
Beautiful.
Give vision.
Thank you so much, and that is a beautiful place to begin with our first point in the tree of life. But first, I just want to read back to you what I heard. When I hear these questions, I get like so excited, because there's a way in which I hope you heard someone else holding a similar question. And so often when we're in our creative space, we think that we're the only one holding that question, right? It can feel so lonely, and I think that's the place of community, that even if we're creating in our space alone, when we come together and we ask our questions, even if you don't leave with an answer, right? I can't promise an answer, but I can promise that you can find some kinship in the question asking. And Rilke the poet, you know, says we need to love our questions too. So there's wisdom, questions about wisdom, fear, creative spaces, structuring creative space. How do I access my poet? What does life mean? reawaken creativity, rediscovering self, sharing what I'm making back into process, healing work, how to express, and where to find the poetic spark. So how we're going to begin today is I'm going to give you like an overview of the tree a little bit. And before I do that, and then we'll actually get into the writing stuff and into our first chokmah, which is wisdom, which is the right brain, and we'll talk about that, the first triad of the tree. But when I say a tree of life, I'm curious, like, quick, just little words, what comes up for you? What do you think about? We're all coming from different spaces. It can be an image, it can be a scripture, it can be from your own garden. When I say tree of life, what do you think about?
Universal.
Universal, beautiful.
Roots and branches.
Beautiful, the mirror of roots and branches. What else?
I just read over story, so I can think about living trees.
Beautiful.
And the Narnia freak, so I think of the Narnia story, whichever one that is, we visit the tree of life.
Amazing.
Rooted and floating.
Beautiful.
Thank you for that image of a tree in your garden, because we have a tree we never expected to get as big as it is, and it's just getting bigger. It's beautiful.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Tree of life. Yes.
The leaves are for the healing of emotions.
Yes.
These are beautiful.
Mostly the Western esoteric system, like Aleister Crowley.
Yeah.
I think of a universal community. I mean, all species, all people in this tree. But also, as a Christian preacher, I also think of Christ.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. Anything else that comes up?
Maybe other things growing in the tree?
Yeah.
Like around and with the tree?
Beautiful. So all of that is welcome here as we talk about the Jewish mystic understanding of the tree of life. And so there's a way in which when I first learned, I overlapped this thinking about a tree that I knew, like onto this great tree that I had walked by many, many times as a child. So your trees are welcome here and your knowledge is welcome here. And I invite you to share if you have a connection point to something I'm talking about in your own tradition. So Kabbalah, is basically comes from the word kabul, which is to receive. So the root of this tradition is the receiving of this knowledge. When I first learned about Kabbalah, all I knew was Madonna, right? She was kind of like this, this poster child. And I was like, oh, I don't want to think about that. There was something about a red string on the left wrist, and it just felt really, really kind of distant, and I didn't understand really how to connect with it. But basically the root of it, using our tree imagery, no pun intended, is that it's a close and intimate experience with the divine. It is that the divine is everywhere in everything. So that basis understanding of mysticism, right? It's everywhere and everything. So Rabbi Isaac Luria, who lived in Israel in the 1600s, developed a theory about creation. Okay, if the whole world is filled with God, if everything we see and touch is filled with God, how can there be room for creation? Like, how did creation happen? If everything is God, why is there other? What does the separation mean? So the first Big Bang theory of God was a pulling inward. Have you all heard this? A pulling inward. So it's a contraction. In Hebrew, it's tzimtzum. So there was a pulling inward, and in that void space, God channeled the energy into the world as vessels. So there are these vessels of light. But because the light was so strong, the vessels shattered. And so that's where this idea in Judaism, tikkun olam, to the repair of the world, maybe you've heard that before, it's one of the concepts that gets put out there. It's the process by which humanity collects those sparks. It's that we're looking for the light in each person. I think poetry can help us do that and access our own light, embrace the light in ourselves. But in this view, we are co-creating with God, right? We are in conversation. Our job is partnering with the divine. So it is not God is above me, God is everywhere, God is within me. Which is, I think, when we think about this in terms of our own creative work, right? It is that God is there too. God is in our creative work. God is in the struggle. God is when we're sitting there looking at the paper like, I can't think of another word. And there's a way for me that opens something. There is a holiness in even my frustration, when I looked at the Tree of Life. When I looked at this, the Tree of Life, simply put, is the divine's creative process. It's how the divine created the world. And so I was like, well, if this was the model that was used to create the whole world in the framework of Jewish mysticism and Kabbalah, how could that apply to my own creative work and my own poetry writing, my own learning? So just a few moments of Proverbs, right? A tree of life is Torah to those who lay hold of it, and those who grasp it are blessed. And a Torah scroll in Judaism has wooden rods through it called Etzai Hayim, which are the trees of life used to roll the parchment. So even within our holy text, it is that we are at, there, the tree of life is even there, okay? I'm so excited to hear you all talk more, but it's a gift to show you all of this. So two important texts is Sefer Yetzirah and the Zohar. Have you heard of these texts? Okay. These are the two primary Kabbalistic texts. And so the Sefer Yetzirah, earliest book on Jewish mysticism, it is ascribed that the patriarch Abraham wrote it. Many think Rabbi Akiva wrote it. So the origins of all this are like super debated. Some say medieval, some say Talmudic. And the Zohar is a foundational work in the literature of Jewish mystical thought as well. And I just put those out there as like, I don't want you to leave learning about Kabbalah without knowing those two kind of major texts.
Say the first one again.
The Sefer Yetzirah.
Yeah, we need.
I will write it down here and I'm happy to write it up. I need my notes because I don't speak Hebrew actually. That's helpful. Okay. So the Zohar and then the Sefer. Yeah. And Sefer, which we're learning, is to count. It comes from the Hebrew word, so the Sefirot, which are each of these principles in the Tree of Life, we'll talk more about that, comes from the Hebrew for Sefer, which is to count.
To count?
To count, yeah. And I'm just going to read you this little passage from the Zohar, and I invite you to use the pronouns that, just substitute the pronouns that work best for you. By 32 mysterious paths of wisdom, Yah has engraved all things, who is the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, the living God, he that is uplifted and exalted, and whose name is holy, having created his world by three derivatives of the Hebrew word sephir, namely sephir, a book, sephor, a count, and sipor, a story, along with 10 calibrations of empty space. 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, of which there are principal letters. Okay, so I read this and thought, a book, a letter, a story, right? We can look at Jewish mysticism as rooted in those. AKA words and language and creation are intimately connected in mystic Judaism. So each of these pathways, which will, and it's on your sheet too, are associated with a Hebrew letter. So there's a way in which also the 10 calibrations of empty space feels really important to mention, right? There is empty space here. With the book, a letter, a story, there's empty space. So in this way, by learning about the divine's pathway towards creation, we can look to our own writing to use this primal process. Great. So yes, Sefer wrote, so there are basically 10 points in the Tree of Life. And they correspond with the Ten Commandments, actually. The idea is that the Ein Sof, which is basically Hebrew for the endless one, God prior to any manifestation, prior to all realms, having no end, this is how we can come to know God, is that through these 10 emanations, there is a way of understanding something that is the nothingness, right? The primal void. And the way that the Tree of Life, a basic understanding, is broken up, we're going to be looking at the primal process for the first two days. So the first triad is the primal process, right? And then we have the second process, which is seeking inner balance. So this is the primal process of creation, is the first, the Keter, the crown, meaning Keter, circle. There's a way that even though there's 1 through 10, the one, the Ein Sof, does not, the next number is not two. It's the one that contains everything. And so therefore we cannot count in order, even though we put numbers on this. There's an understanding that we go from beginning to end. This is a circle. So the first triad, the primal process, which we are beginning with, and then we move to the second triad, which is seeking inner balance, which is a lower realm, and we go one realm lower, which didn't put on the board, but we'll work on later in the week, and that's looking for setting our foundation and our roots. Okay, so that's just like a general overview. I know that it is so much. This, as I was saying, this is just like a just rich tradition for each of these processes. But I think what I want to say is that the very first point on the Tree of Life, before we get to the Chokhmah wisdom, which is what we're going to talk about today, we have the Keter, the crown, and this is the mind beyond mind. This would correspond to the crown chakra. Mind beyond mind, stillness, pure compassion, potential. So I think it's just so beautiful that in the creative process, there is space for absolute nothingness. There is space for looking at your page and saying, you know, I'm just sitting with emptiness. That is absolutely necessary for the creative process to sort of recognize and hold that as holy in your own creative work, right? That it is not something to berate oneself for sitting in the nothingness. That's actually part of, before we ever get to the first spark, the chokmah, the wisdom, our creative work, we're sitting in our emptiness and recognizing it as holy and as potential and as stillness. Okay? So that is the first point. So Chokhmah, wisdom. This is the second Sephiroth emanation. The coolest thing that blew my mind about Kabbalah is the way that this corresponds to the body. So Chokhmah corresponds to the right brain. Okay, so we have right brain and left brain thinking, which I'm sure many people here know about and can speak more in it than I can. But I just think it absolutely is profound to me that we have an understanding in this that we have our right brain, the spark, the primal point, the deep well, that first moment where you're like, this could be a poem or a story or a song. And that is first before our left brain, before our structure, before our, okay, here's how I'm gonna do it, right? Here's how I'm gonna structure it. Here's how I'm gonna make this into work. So yes, it's the first and finest point of real existence, Chokhmah, wisdom, all things, souls, and moments of time that are ever to be now exist within a primal point, like in the Big Bang. That is that how it is? That's how it goes. It's that enclosed, very dense space before an explosion of vastness. So yes, the first move is a transition from nothingness to being, from pure potential to the first point of real existence. It's concentrated form. And I see on the thing I put, Job 28:12, and where shall wisdom be found, and where is the place of understanding? When I read that, what do you all think of? What is your understanding of that scripture? Where have you heard it? I have not studied scripture closely, so I look to you to invite your own understanding when those questions are asked.
So,
I'm sorry, did you read that again?
Yeah, and it's on your worksheet too. And where shall wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding?
So as I understand it, and I have not studied the Bible, you know, a lot either, is Job went through many trials and tribulations. And so he was very frustrated, and he wanted to find the meaning out of that. Where is the meaning? Where is the wisdom? And how can I understand what is happening to me?
Beautiful. Beautiful. Any other thoughts? Yeah, please.
The Christian tradition often identifies Jesus as the wisdom of God.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much.
There's maybe even a lot more questions than answers, right? Yes. Like in the Psalms, mm-hmm. That's the really familiar one. To the hills, from whence cometh my help? It's not like, oh, my help comes from the hills, but actually, where? Lots of questions like this, right?
Where
shall
absolutely
the yearning and the questions.
Yeah. Yes. And I think
of other questions in Job too that come from the end of Job, when Job is trying to understand what's going on, and the answer that comes to him is another question, and that is, where were you when I formed the earth? So that a very confounding kind of response to a question that is seeking an answer. It's another question.
Beautiful. And I love that that makes space, the way that the Tree of Life is, goes, it is, yes, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, but they're all linked. And so you look on this, the way that every Sefer wrote links back to each other. So in even our Chokmah, our wisdom, the question leads back to the crown, leads back to that space, right? And that sort of opening and that vastness. Beautiful. So the thing I want to say quickly is just that Bina, understanding left brain, and this is really important for Kabbalah, is that we always have something on the other side. So, right? So we wouldn't have this going to the right brain, to the primal point, to the spark, without, which we'll work on tomorrow, the left brain, the understanding, the way of rendering this into the world, would be, we get stuck here, right? And I have often felt that. You're like, I have an idea, it's so good. I can't do it. Like, I can't actually get it out into the world. And the third eye sort of space exists in between these two, the right brain, the wisdom of the right brain, and Bina, the understanding, the structure of the left brain. So that's just another important point. We'll look at Chesed and Gevurah, so compassion and openness and boundaries, another way corresponding with the right shoulder and the left shoulder. We're always trying to seek our place between these two, and they need each other, right? So we have this point, so there is a great story of a mirror hall. So the spark of light reflects down the mirror hall. And so that we need our structure to be able to render. They're both so important. It's not like one is better than the other, even though they're in order from 1, 2, and 3. That's another really important point. So the questions that I wrote for this, but I'm welcoming and open to us all holding space for other questions too. I mean, the space is fluid and it's yours. Is how can we plant the seeds of our poetic ideas or other creative ideas, right? What does it look like to nourish and nurture our poems? I think we often get into a space of like, this is horrible. I'm going to walk away, and we're not in relationship to our creative work in the way that we would be in relationship to a person, right? A sort of gentleness and openness and tenderness there. So let us then together spend time thinking about that. So I guess my first question to you all is like, when I say, what is it like to be in relationship to nourish the spark, the first idea that comes, what comes up for you? What do you think of? What are some ways or practices we can bring into the room for nourishing, to hold space for each other?
Can you state that a different way?
Yeah. How can we, when we have an idea, how do we nurture that idea into being? What are some practices, whether that's journaling, whether that's putting your pen to paper?
I think breathing with it.
Breathing, beautiful.
Holding it, breathing with it.
Beautiful, great, yeah.
It doesn't, baseball player, there's a phrase, if you're a pitcher, trust your stuff.
Yes, beautiful.
It took me a long time as a mathematician to trust. Because I was just always trying to have the whole thing before I started. And, or just to trust that starting writing.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Trust it that it comes and
great.
It works.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
I've done some prayer journaling where it's a position of listening.
Mm-hmm.
So you suspend judgment of your writing so that God can speak. And so what you're writing, you're not judging, this can't be true, or God can't be saying this. But when I read it back, it is. It's not my voice, it's the voice of God. So I can have conversations with God in a way that... So I just parallel that to say that the writing process can be the same, where you just suspend judgment and be in a posture of listening.
Amazing. That's so beautiful. There's a way, every time, like when we talk about creative process, I'm amazed at how much wisdom each one of us holds about like how to be with our own work. and just like wanting to remind you all of the being with relationship to the work as a person. That's been one of the most beautiful learnings about this particular part, the right brain, the sense of you having all these ideas coming from this vastness. And before you shoot them down, right, before there's this left brain that comes in, and we'll learn how to channel that tomorrow, to sort of say that's not good enough. How do we be with it as like, as you would a person you deeply love and care about, and to say, okay, you're here, right? Like you get to be here. We so often sort of take away that chance to let it bloom, to let it grow. So I thought we would turn to some passages to look at, and then we'll do a little bit of our writing. You all on your handout have an excerpt about seeds. Do we have gardeners in here, people who work with plants? Anyone? Okay. Can I get someone to read this passage from Hope Gerron's Lab Girl, which is a beautiful memoir I really recommend. A seed, it begins, "A seed knows how to wait." Brenda, yeah, please read.
If Romeo and Juliet...
Or a little bit earlier.
Okay, each beginning? No, down here.
Sorry. Beautiful.
Got it. A seed knows how to wait. Most seeds wait for at least a year before starting to grow. A cherry seed can wait for 100 years with no problem. What exactly each seed is waiting for is known only to that seed. Some unique trigger combination of temperature, moisture, light, and many other things is required to convince a seed to jump off the deep and take its chance, to take its one and only chance to grow. Each beginning is the end of a waiting. We are each given exactly one chance to be. Each of us is both impossible and inevitable. Every replete tree was first a seed that waited.
Beautiful. Thank you for that reading. Each beginning is the end of a waiting. And I don't know if I agree, we're each given exactly one chance to be in our creative work, maybe in our lives, but there's a way we get many chances.
Yeah.
We get many chances in our writing. But the thing that really stands out to me is this: a seed knows how to wait, right?
Yeah.
Like, how do we be patient in that initial moment of inspiration? How do we hold the space in the way that, like, if we look at a seed and we're, like, digging it up, which I've done, right? We're like, where are you? Where is your blooming? That sort of cuts the creative process short, right? And then I just want to, I think someone, Mary Oliver, do you all know the poet?
Yeah.
This is one of her brilliant ideas about the combination of Binah structure and Chokmah wisdom. I think this basically synthesizes it perfectly. If Romeo and Juliet had made their appointments to meet in the moonlight-swept orchard, in all the peril and sweetness of conspiracy, and then more often than not failed to meet, one or the other lagging or afraid or busy elsewhere, there would have been no romance, no passion, none of the drama for which we remember and celebrate them. Writing a poem is not so different. It is a kind of possible love affair between something like the heart, that courageous but also shy factory of emotion, and the learned skills of the conscious mind. They make appointments with each other and keep them, and something begins to happen. Or they make appointments with each other but are casual and often fail to keep them. Count on it, nothing happens. The part of the psyche that works in concert with consciousness and supplies a necessary part of the poem, the heart of the star as opposed to the shape of the star, let us say, exists in a mysterious unmapped zone, not unconscious, not subconscious, but cautious. It learns quickly what sort of courtship it is going to be. Say you promise to be at your desk in the evenings from 7 to 9. It waits. It watches. If you are reliably there, it begins to show itself. Soon it begins to arrive when you do. But if you are only there sometimes and are frequently late or inattentive, it will appear fleetingly or it will not appear at all. Why should it? It can wait. It can stay silent a lifetime. Who knows anyway what it is, that wild, silky part of ourselves without which no poem can live? But we do know this: if it is going to enter into a passionate relationship and speak what is in its own portion of your mind, the other responsible and purposeful part of you had better be a Romeo. It doesn't matter if risk is somewhere close by, risk is always hovering somewhere. but it won't involve itself with anything less than a perfect seriousness. For the would-be writer of poems, this is the first and most essential thing to understand. It comes before everything, even technique. I know that's long, but I think it's the most beautiful, amazing explanation of this kind of concert that happens with the second and the third set. He wrote the wisdom, the right brain, and the left brain, be not understanding. So I'm just looking at our time. Shall we do some writing? Shall we do some practicing of this and being with? Okay. So I'd like us to begin by holding some empty space with, if any of you have a meditation practice, that's there. And I know that's not available to anyone, to everybody. So if it's not, please just take this time to use as you wish. But I'm just gonna set a timer for 3 minutes. And I just want us to hold the empty space with this knowledge, the mind beyond mind, the stillness, and how that empty space leads to that spark, the spark to us. So I invite you to just take 2 or 3 minutes and just sit in the silence. I want you to gently come out of your silence, and without letting the left brain take over too quickly, I want you to make a list of moments you felt a spark in the past week or while you were at Holden in the past day. So this could be the light hitting the water, the sound of a voice that intrigued you, the call of a bird. What were some sparks where you felt like maybe you saw it and you were excited, it felt like it could be a creative, could lead to some writing? And if you can't think of any sparks, just write down what you remember, because there's often a spark in there. Okay, we need to find a good resting spot. It was beautiful to watch. I'll be scribbling away. So many sparks. And read over your list. And without thinking too hard again, just write your impulse. Circle one of these sparks. Circle the one that excites you the most. Feels a little extra sparkly. I don't know you're ready, because you'll be looking up. Okay, so that will be, is everyone in a, has their spark? Their circle point. Okay. So that will be the spark that we're working with for the next part of the writing exercise. And because we've been talking about what it means to be in relationship to the spark, I just want you to take a little moment in whatever way that feels good and sort of greet that idea. That all these things I saw scribbling away on the piece of paper were all waiting for you, right? Like these are all there. We have all these questions, but all these ideas are right there for you. They were all there. So thinking about this moment, we're gonna do a 5-minute free writing exercise. Has any of you done morning pages before?
Yes.
Okay, beautiful. So basically, I just want you to keep your hand moving for these 5 minutes. Don't cross anything out, okay? I don't want you to have the editor of the left side of the brain come in and say this is wrong. And even if you're writing, I don't know, for the full 5 minutes, that is allowed, and I have done that, okay? But I just want you to see where that spark takes you. You might end up writing about your like grandmother's rose bush garden, and it's completely far from the first thing. That's okay, okay? Just see where that takes you, okay? Is everyone ready? Set the timer. Written. And rereading what you've written, I want you to pull from this block of writing maybe that you have, where is the heat for you? Like when you reread your work, what about it feels like you could extract just a few lines for a poem, right? It can just be one line from that block of writing. In something, is there something that excites you, right? Is there a spark within the spark that you've just made? Can you begin to shape this piece, and pull a few lines from it that could be a poem? And if you're stuck, just choose one line from this block of text, and write it again on your piece of paper with some blank space.
So copy it over on. Mm-hmm. And it's just one line.
It can be more. Yeah.
Okay.
It could be a long line.
It could be a long line.
Okay.
These are just guidelines, right? Let your you know what you need, I think. Okay, this is the vulnerable and scary part. Does anyone feel comfortable sharing either their lines or what that experience was like for you? Yes? Remind me of your name.
My name is Forrest.
Forrest, yes.
What it was like, or the lines.
Yes, or both.
Or both. It was fascinating to watch little digger bees in this hot dust uncovering a pencil hole, and they're all on their own.
Mm.
They're solitary. There's all these cars parked around them. They're still there in the hot dust. They're digging, uncovering this little, flying in with, they're moving so much dust, like a pile of dust to uncover this little, what you're doing, you're so much work. And then they fly in with a huge fat load of pollen on their, in their pollen basket, and then crawl into the dust and just disappear. And there was no, it was utterly mysterious. What are they doing now?
That's so great. Amazing.
Yeah, I was amazed at that.
Amazing. What a spark.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Anyone else want to share? Yeah. Remind me of your name.
Mark.
Mark.
Mm-hmm. So I'm volunteering here, and I'm in housekeeping, which means every toilet every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so the night before we had been sprinkled at worship with baptismal water. And the next morning, as I was cleaning a toilet and watching the water, I thought, well, it's water after all, coming and going.
Beautiful.
So that was my line.
Thank you for your volunteering and your work.
Thank you. We were at Lake Chelan. We stayed in kind of a crummy little motel, because mm-hmm. the only place we could find. And they had a little pool. And we went up to that pool. And there's a family that came to swim when we were, and I was sure they were going to be really annoying to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, but I
know those people.
But I was writing about them, and there was a whole other piece to that. And so here came the daughter and the mother, and I said, she's pulling a tote bag. Music? Rap? The beat? It's a speaker. And the music is controlled by the phone. And I can just see going somewhere with this.
Yeah, beautiful. I'm so glad you feel that way.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Because it took that, there was this whole thing going on with this, yeah. this family was having so much fun together.
Amazing.
So.
Thank you.
So I wouldn't have thought that I could go there.
Awesome. We'll do one more share. Anyone else want to share their line? Or you can also be like, that was hard. I invite that and welcome that. Like, I got stuck. We have to be able to talk about that piece too. So often we sit in a room and you're like, everyone's scribbling away. I'm just like, so that's welcome also.
I'd share mine.
Yeah.
The line I wrote was, wings moving faster than thought. And I had seen a hummingbird this morning on the porch just as I was, and I've always had this sort of interesting relationship with hummingbirds. Talking to each other or something. Sorry if that's too much.
Yeah.
But when you were talking about where the spark comes from earlier for poetry or verse or whatever, I feel like I've had this idea that some of my better work or best stuff sort of already existed and I just had to find it. Mm-hmm. And almost like, I can't find the right analogy, but it's almost as if like fishing sort of works, or picking up a piece of fruit out of midair sort of works, it just sort of mysteriously appears there. And so I took that hummingbird idea this morning and thought about that bird bringing me some inspiration. So that's, she brought a little gift.
Amazing. Can I offer a metaphor? Which I often think of Michelangelo and the block of stone. The stone's there, right?
Yes, yes.
And it's just looking in to see the statue, but that you're just chipping away.
Finding that's already there, yeah.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what's your name?
Pardon?
What's your name?
Oh, my name is Chris.
We are about out of time, but I'd like to offer you one poem from one of my favorite poets, Araceli Gourmet. And the reason I had you write that line on a separate piece of paper is that maybe you'll feel, as you have this new spark sometime this week, to sort of, and we'll have a few exercises where you'll get some space, but hopefully that is something you can embark with and take with you and write into sometime this week. Can I get a reader I'd like to hear this two times, so can I get two readers for this poem? Consider the hands that write this letter. Yes, Forrest and Brenda, would you like to read? Forrest, why don't you read first?
Consider the hands that write this letter, the left palm pressed flat against the paper, as it has done before, over my heart. In peace or reverence to the sea or some beautiful thing I saw once, felt once, snow falling like rice flung from the giant's wedding, or the strangest birds, and consider then the right hand and how it is a fist within which a sharpened utensil, similar to the way I've held a spade, matched to the wick, the horse's reins loping, the very fists I've seen from the roads to the May and Esteli. For years I have come to sit this way, one hand open, one hand closed, like a farmer who puts down seeds and gathers up the food that comes from that farming. Or yes, it is like the way I've danced with my left hand opened around a shoulder, and my right hand closed inside of another hand, and how I pray for this to be my way, sweet work alluded to in the body's position to its paper, left hand, right hand, like an open eye, an eye closed, one hand flat against the trap door, the other hand knocking, knocking.
Consider the hands that write this letter, the left palm pressed flat against the paper, as it has done before, over my heart, in peace or reverence to the sea, or some beautiful thing I saw once, felt once, snow falling like rice flung from the giant's wedding, or the strangest birds, and consider then the right hand, and how it is a fist, within which a sharpened utensil similar to the way I held a spade matched to the wick, the horse's reins loping, the very fists I've seen from the roads to LeMay and Esteli. For years I have come to sit this way, one hand open, one hand closed, like a farmer who puts down seeds and gathers up the food that comes from that farming. Or yes, it is like the way I've danced with my left hand opened around a shoulder and my right hand closed inside of another hand. And how I pray for this to be my way, sweet work alluded to the body's position to its paper, left hand, right hand, like an open eye, an eye closed, one hand flat against the trapdoor, the other hand knocking, knocking.
So beautiful. Thank you. So as we finish up today's session, or I want to respect your time and we're a few minutes over, but think about the hands as these sparks too, right? One of the poets I love, Natalie Diaz, talks about the hands as the gateways to tenderness and also sometimes violence, right? And so as we use, many of us use our hands for our writing, I just invite you as you go off with your spark to think about at Holden all the ways your hands are sort of the sparks for your creative work and the rest of your day.
Yes. Question, are you building upon your workshops because you're doing them?
They each can work on their own, so I'll be doing a review, but they do kind of build.
Okay.
But, it was such an honor to be with all of you, and I think there's a coffee hour, so I'm sorry we didn't have time for questions, but
I enjoy the coffee hour too, yeah.
What? Yeah, I'm the coffee hour.
I'm the coffee hour. So there you go.
Well, there's a natural dye.
Yeah, there's
natural dye. Thank you.
Thank you.